Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And so maybe you want to mention...
Before you go on to some of the specifics of what went down in the Sullivan Chamber, I just want to mention two really, at least from my point of view, from people I've known, two significant passings. One is Bob Richards. Bob Richards is a neighbor of mine who lives on Antrim Street.
Did live in,
And he was, until recently.
No. Apparently, I sent a letter and I got returned. I think Jane is in Uville now.
So they moved up to Broadway and then to Uville, right? But so Bob passed away in, I think it was December 19th.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's, like, everybody knew Bob. He worked at the CRLS as a teacher. And in the political world, he was sort of just a person everybody knew and everybody liked, you know. So it was a very sort of a sad thing. I was actually speaking last night with his daughter,
Susan,
yeah. And and just how many people actually showed up at the services for it. You know, it was really quite impressive.
Yeah, I couldn't go, but
I mean, Bob and I would talk politics a lot, right? But we'd also talk about other things too. And he was actually one of the co-founders of the longest-running block party in the city, the Antrim Street block party.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So you went to the funeral.
I did not.
It was on the 4th. Yeah.
Yeah. But I heard. Yeah. Another person is Gil Albert. Now, I don't know how many people, a lot of old-time Cambridge people will know him, but it was a late resolution for him.
Yeah.
So Gil, I first met him. I didn't know him particularly well, but I met him back when I was friends of a person who was running Sheila Russell's political campaign many, many years ago.
It was way back.
You know, so you get introduced to Gil, you know, and it's like, it was great, you know. But the thing, one rather remarkable thing, and I think it's an interesting statement about Cambridge, is that he has 8 children.
Wow.
6 sons, all of whom are police or firefighters.
Wow.
In either Cambridge or Holyoke, Massachusetts.
That's not that unusual, I don't think.
No, right. The reason I was going to mention is that there are some families where this is, it's sort of like a family tradition. You know, and one of them is Jack Albert, who's a deputy superintendent, who's a good friend and a great guy. So this is his dad. So anyway, so just wanted to make a note about passing
nice.
To Gil. Anyway, you know, more details, I suppose you can check it out in the paper, right?
Yeah.
Actually, another mention here, just in terms of political families, is that Gil's nephew is actually former Cambridge Teachers Association president
former
city council.
Yeah.
And I think will also be his city council candidate in 2009, and Paul Toner, right? That's his nephew. So, you know, so this is sort of the, you know, the blood that runs through the city of Cambridge, to be sure. So anyway, back to city council related stuff.
Okay.
So in addition to some of these other things we were speaking about in the first half hour, there was some pretty substantial items, not so much action items, but some initiating items that will become larger things a little bit down the road. I mean, there were no ordinances to pass. There was no zoning legislation to finalize
or
anything like that, you know. So it was more sort of introducing a few things that are going to become kind of real deals. One of the items was, actually, I think there were three items
three
on the agendas.
About the arts, you mean?
Yeah. Okay, so, and I don't know how long this arts task force that is chaired Alana Mal, but I was reading some of the ideas that were being thrown out
report,
by the committee report.
And they definitely, that's where
And then they are reflected in these orders,
exactly.
You know, and, you know, they're basically just not to summarize them entirely here, but one proposal was to dedicate a certain percentage of the hotel motel tax, which is
exists now. What's this 1% thing?
We'll get to that
okay,
one here.
Right, okay.
Okay. So again, city doesn't have the right to just tax because it wants to tax.
It's
always done through
petition.
State enabling legislation or a home rule petition.
Okay.
So, but the thing is you know, city does derive revenue through a hotel motel tax because the state said you can do that.
Right.
Actually, they told every city in town you can do that.
And restaurants. Too.
Right. So then there's I think you get some additional tax
you
from
can
that.
Add, yeah.
Right. There's because when the legalization of recreational or what they call adult use cannabis, that also involves some relatively modest tax that's
modest,
associated
10%.
With that.
isn't it? Well, it's pretty high. I don't know.
You know, I think that there was still some discussion about making it not too high.
You're talking about in the city?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, so there's going to be some tax money for that. So one of the ideas that was floated as in the form of a city council order last night was to dedicate a percentage of the hotel motel revenue, as well as future revenue from cannabis sales.
And the short-term rental? Or is that different?
Different. Okay. But to dedicate it toward arts in Cambridge.
Mm.
All right? There was, in a similar fashion, you know, when the Barrett petition was passed a couple of years ago, it was a notion to be set up a Central Square Improvement Fund, which actually hasn't really been set up.
Right.
But so now it's saying, like, okay, Mr. City Manager, please set it up and dedicate at least 25% of it for arts programming.
Hmm.
Right? There's also a proposal, a little imprecise, suggesting changes, not particularly specified changes, in the 1% for the arts ordinance. Right now, if you're doing a major public project, you know, a city building, a school building, then you basically take whatever the budget is and you take 1% of it, and then that has to be dedicated to arts.
But the arts that are within those buildings, though, there was some discussion that isn't always public.
So, for example, when Central Square, we had, was it $5 million of improvements we did in the mid to late 90s in Central Square? So you had to take 1% of that and then do some art project.
And were those the murals?
No. That's only relatively recently.
Those were
all privately done. Those are not publicly funded.
Mm.
But basically, there's an art piece that's in the middle of Carl Barron Plaza of that.
I see.
Right? Now, one of the things that I remember about this at the time was that the architects that were, you know, working with and the planners for doing some of the changes to Central Square, when they narrowed the roadway and put in wider sidewalks and put in an extra row of trees, and they put in bus shelters and various other things, is that one of the things I kind of came to understand is that people who work in that line of work really do view themselves as artists.
Yeah.
And some of them are legitimate artists, and, you know, sort of in addition to what they do professionally. Yet the way things are sort of segregated, the thing is that they can't do the art as part of the project. So you have to bring in an outside artist to do the art component.
Well, I wouldn't say they're all artists.
I didn't say they were all, but the thing is, some of them really are. You know, to me, I always felt that when you're doing some of these projects, to have a much more integrated way of incorporating the art into the projects could work well. I'll give you an example of one case of 1% for the art would work perfectly.
Yeah.
And even though there had been a prior proposal which was rejected, that was when they were doing the reconstruction of the water treatment plant at Fresh Pond. So originally the proposal from Mags Harries was that there going to be this sort of cascade of the water, rather than anonymously entering Fresh Pond in a pipe, was going to kind of cascade almost waterfall-like down into the pond, which I actually liked.
Yeah.
Right? But there were some people said, oh, no, it's going to ruin the pastoral nature, and there was a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, regroup, come up with a different idea. So what came out of it was this incredible work of art, which is the floor of the water treatment facility, which is a complete map, replication of a map of the city with brass, I think it's brass, inlaid, showing the water system for the whole city. So it's incredibly educational, and it's beautiful to look at.
So rather than being outside,
it's inside. But it was really good.
Yeah.
But the point is that it is so well integrated with the whole idea of a water treatment facility.
Right.
So that's a really successful example, I think, of integrating arts into a major public project.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the others, I'm not so sure. They look a little kind of temporary.
There must be a list of these, right? I think the
Community Development
has a list of art.
The Arts Council
administers these things.
You
that's
know.
True, yeah.
So anyway, so this other order here says, recommends changes to the 1% for the arts. Now, I don't know whether that changes, they mean it shouldn't be 1%, it should be like 2% for the arts or 5% for the arts.
Yeah.
But there's something kind of ridiculous about an idea like that, in that if it's, you know, project used to be cost a certain amount of money, and then 1% was 1%. Now they cost five times as much, which means 1% is five times as much money, even under the current ordinance. So okay. I'm not so sure that this needs to be changed. Maybe some of the procedures about it and the standards could be changed a little bit. But in any case, you know, shining a bit more light on how we do arts administration and how we do funding for these projects isn't a bad thing, mm-hmm. right? Even if we come out of it and still we don't make any fundamental changes mm-hmm. to how we do it.
Yeah.
As far as some of the other ones about dedicated revenue streams for the arts, I'm a little uneasy about
this. There was a little pushback generally. From one of a very frequent commenter about housing and homeless and how the arts are
But this is one of the problems that I have is that, to me, there's a reason why we actually have budgets and budget hearings and mm-hmm. process. Now, granted, the city council rarely changes things as part of the budget process. But the thing is that it's not like there's funds being denied to these various priorities. Mm. But it's currently being done through a deliberative, thoughtful, inclusive process where all possible priorities are being balanced against each other.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit of a problem when you basically say, well, we had a series of meetings and we've decided that it would be great to have 25% of this revenue stream go to the arts. Mm. Well, there's a lot of other interests in the city too, like water infrastructure or child care facilities or something.
Well, just because they say it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's
But to me, the whole notion that you sort of like, quick, let's push this here and say, well, this money has to go toward specific
you throw
priority.
It at the wall and you see what sticks. I mean, I don't blame him for doing it.
All right, so I view this as sort of kicking off a process which hopefully will lead to a resolution where other interests also are represented. And what comes out of it is something that's a little more holistic.
Well, tell me about the short-term rental potential income because the state finally passed something.
Yeah.
Where would that money go, and is that in the ordinance?
I don't actually know. I'm a little curious about that myself because I should remember the ordinance that we passed here more precisely. I know that there was going to be a fee to support... So the money that could be potentially generated if ever the state legislature acted through short-term rental regulation.
Well, they did act.
They did, right. But the thing is, when we passed it, we didn't have the authority to get the money at the time. We could regulate. We could say that you can't operate.
Well, we can collect our own money, right?
Unless the state says yay.
Oh.
But the thing is, we could certainly regulate, right? So now the state did act late in the session.
So now we can figure out
Now the issue is, I tried reading it, and honestly, I have to tell you.
Which way? Ours or the state?
The state's,
It's onerous because
it's a tough read.
Each city can actually add their own tax on top of what they're talking about, which might be 6% or so, I don't know.
So the question then is that does the enabling legislation from the state passed in late December, how does that mesh in with the city's short-term rental regulations?
Well, they were looking forward to it. I remember
they needed it.
They wanted that.
The question is that revenue dedicated toward specific things or does it just go into the general fund?
Oh,
I actually would prefer that it go into the general fund, but
you're talking about in terms of ours
or even the states,
The states probably goes into the general fund.
But then there are some who would say, well, but this is housing related, therefore any money generated should go into quote affordable housing.
Yeah.
Right?
I'll do some homework on that.
It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah.
And that actually relates to another city council letter from last night, which actually brought out a lot of commentary during public comment period. Not all positively, and even the positive one had qualifying aspects. So this had to do with a proposed real estate transfer
tax. Which has come up before,
tax.
It seems like, in every council.
It's an idea that gets floated. Yeah. It's potential.
And also statewide, too.
Yeah.
It's been a statewide.
So there's a potential, it could be some potential serious money generated. And on the very positive side of the idea, is that if you have sort of real estate speculation going on wildly, where somebody purchases some parcel for X number of millions of dollars and then 3 years later they flip it and they sell it for twice as much, and they were all just sort of moving property back and forth and people making more and more money, if there was a tax on every time there was a transfer, either on this whole amount or on some the amount the above a certain level, that could generate a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? Now, what would actually happen if there was a tax like that? you know, one person during public comment, I think, correctly pointed out that, well, then it would just be reviewed as the cost of doing business, and any tax would simply be passed along in the form of higher expenses of, you know, for whatever projects actually ended up being built. Yeah. It would just get absorbed into the project.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's potentially true.
Yeah.
Right? But then the city says, oh, but it's a cash cow. We can make a pile of money. And then they say, well, okay, if that's true, should that money go into the general fund to support everything mm-hmm. the city does?
This or is, should this it be is, dedicated? This is residential real estate, not commercial.
It's both. Already,
really?
It's both,
but aren't there linkage fees and everything with commercial
Well,
real
see,
estate?
That's the thing that I think is
really
a bit
confused.
Misleading last night.
Yeah.
It's that it's not
I thought
like,
it was mainly residential.
I mean, the thing yeah. Is that... Mm-hmm. You know, there's the buying and selling of real estate, but then the thing is also when you go get your permit, you have a linkage fee you have to pay. If you're going to build housing, then the city already
then you have the inclusionary thing,
right? And yeah. and that's not
okay.
free. I mean that.
Right.
I mean it ends up being free in terms of the city not having to fund it.
I think this was aimed at private. People buying $2 million homes. That's what I was taking from it. Not
well, I think some of the
condos.
Some of the public
stuff.
Commentary yeah. basically said, and I think Somerville passed a home rule petition.
Yeah, which is
because this is what this would be too.
Right, and that's still in. That's on the state. It's
right.
being decided. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, it has to get refiled.
Right.
But they don't. The city of Somerville doesn't have to revote it at all.
I see.
Right, they just need another sponsor
They're
to refile it.
They're now councilors now, by the way.
I know. Now they're not,
not
aldermen
alderman
anymore. They're city
councilors.
You know, considering the particular individuals who were elected in the last municipal election in Somerville, they really should just be change them to comrades.
Oh, stop!
And,
Well, they certainly aren't paid like our
right.
city councilors, so that's for sure.
That's true. That is true. Right.
All right. So what? So where would this?
So yeah. so anyway, if this so some people I think would like. That any revenue generated from a transfer tax should be dedicated toward, you know, the purchase of subsidized housing,
right.
you know, the subsidized housing things.
Right.
I don't personally agree with that. I just think if it's a revenue source, it's a revenue source. And I still think that thoughtful citywide budgeting really
should go to the general fund.
Should go to the general fund. And But, you know, people are trying to take a big bite of the apple,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And if you could generate like $100 million out of a fund and you dedicate it toward one use, that's a little funny
to me. I mean, I'd rather that money go to our infrastructure.
Well, it also...
You know, it's like, get those bites.
But you know, it kind of goes against the whole concept of city management when, in fact... All the decisions about where the money comes from and where it goes are all being decided and encoded into ordinances prior to the city management making recommendations how to prioritize city funds.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have some major issues with this way of doing business.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, it seems to be a bit of a pattern that's emerging here of that more and more sort of taking control from city management and putting it into the hands of the political people. Actually, there's another order that was on the agenda last night that was, I don't think there was any discussion of it at all. But
You're talking about the last one about city councilors being on.
Yeah, did they talk about that?
No.
All right, so that just, they breezed through.
So to refresh our memories, it was...
Okay, so right now when there's a city is doing a big project, like they're making a decision about a school building or doing all these things, the city manager brings in advice from city staff. Sometimes they are members of the public or sort of who have some expertise in this are sort of brought in to help along.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, architects and whatever, right?
Major public building project selection committee representation. That was
so,
order 14.
So there's an order there last night where the city councilors are saying, well, we would like it to be the case that at least one city councilor must be on these selection committees. And I thought to myself, well, hold on a minute, okay? There's a reason why when back in, you know, many, many decades ago, when the particular city manager form of government was established and the Plan E charter was made available, and the Plan D charter as well, prior to that, without proportional representation, the idea was you wanted to have a bit of a separation between management and the politics. So you have your policy makers who set the policies, and then they hire the manager, and the manager carries out
the
policies.
Okay.
When you start kind of breaking down that line and you start saying, well, we want to have some of the elected officials be part of the team who's making the management decisions, which, and let's face it.
So it's mixing the politics with the...
It's just like, it's like leaping right over the boundary between these two fundamental... The responsibilities of the political people and the management people are separated for a good reason.
Yeah.
And the place it comes, they come together is when they meet on Monday night in the city council meeting and city councilors, and I should say a majority of city councilors, pass an order saying, Mr. Manager, we want you to do this.
Yeah.
Not one city, you know, you can't have one city councilor say, well, I've just filed an order, so Mr. Manager, do this. That has no weight at all, right? So the thing is the council has to come to some consensus about what they feel the manager should do, and then they request the manager to act on it. It's not an absolute mandate, because the manager could say, well, look, and that's going to cost so much money to do that that it's going to bankrupt the city. I can't do that. And then, of course, ultimately, the city council has the ultimate control. They can say, well, Mr. Manager, you're not doing anything we want, so we're going to fire you.
That's rare, though, to go that far.
It has not happened very often, right? But the thing is that even with a contract, the city manager does, according to the charter, serve at the pleasure of the city council. And on any given Monday night, city council could fire the manager, but they won't. But just saying is that that's the way it works.
But then they'd also have to fire some of the people from community development.
It has often been referred to as the nuclear option.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, it's not something you ever really want to do. The way it would work is maybe when a nowadays, I think the modern procedure would be when somebody's manager's contract is up, then you would make a decision whether to extend it
to
or
renew
not.
It,
that's typically how it would be done. But at least in principle, the manager does serve at the pleasure of the council, but the manager's responsibility is fundamentally separate from that of the political leadership.
Well, and who are on these selection committees generally?
You know, it's really, it's at the discretion of the manager to make those decisions. But,
I mean, is it people from the city? Citizens?
Typically, one thing is that when Bob Healy was manager, Richie Rossi was always a central part of every capital project.
Yeah.
And he was sort of a person who was really riding herd on a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
He's aware of the budget.
Richie's really special talent.
Okay.
But the thing is that if it was something involving school buildings, certainly the superintendent of schools, the people who are... Fundamentally,
but do you have stakeholders? I mean, do you have, like, in schools? Do you have parents? Don't they have meetings with people that are?
I don't know if it. Yeah,
like
I think
citizens.
Right. So I think that the manager and maybe the city council has requested this. I don't recall. It's sort of good practice to get get some of these voices involved in there. But there's something a little tricky about having a city councilor serve on it.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I don't see why they can. Because it is political. Though.
Yeah, I'm actually spacing out a little bit now. There was a controversy just this past month where there was this climate action thing, I think, pursuant to the failed Brown petition.
Mayor McGovern actually
They wanted to have four city councilors
and
on
then
this
he realized that
committee,
was not
and
a
then
good
they,
idea.
In the end, they modified the proposal, and now they have zero city councilors on it, which.
And not even an assistant to the mayor? I thought there was somebody that...
They could have served on, but they chose not to. But, these are something... It's interesting to me that to watch, especially some of the newer councilors, energetically want to make sort of these changes because they think they're good ideas, whatever, but they're not really thinking the long view about the reason why we actually have
those things.
Like a charter division. Yeah. You know, I mean, you could easily imagine a situation where you have a city councilor who's just been laying the law down at these meetings, pretty much saying, Mr. Manager, you damn well better hire such and such a firm. You know, it wouldn't have any weight. But the thing is that it would be a difficulty, to be sure. So anyway, I hope that this goes nowhere, and my presumption is that the city solicitor will say, well, this has problems.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I don't want to presume what Nancy Glow is going to say about that. One other item, I don't know where it goes and whether it's just going to be perfectly symbolic. I guess it is perfectly symbolic. So
did they talk about that? Yeah, they did.
Zondervan pulled it and they did talk about it.
But they didn't vote on it, did they?
It's not really much to do. I mean, basically, I don't know.
No, but what did it...
I actually don't know.
No, the vote was to endorse it and to send that on. I don't remember.
If there was anything other than saying, we think this Green New Deal is a wonderful, wonderful thing, great, 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 you know, but it doesn't affect anything that the city does. So,
no, but it's...
There's no downside to the city council passing it.
That's true.
Yeah. But as one of the things I pointed out about it is that if you've got sort of a new, what's her name, Ocasio-Cortez from New York, basically saying, you know, I insist
that you must
pass this new Green Deal. And then meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi is chosen as the new speaker and then says, no, actually, well, I think a better procedure would be to do such and such a thing. So when the city council says, let's do what Ocasio-Cortez says, they are fundamentally saying, don't do what Speaker Pelosi says.
Well, it says, just resolve that the council go on record urging our congressional delegation, that means all of them, to continue advocating for such a Green New Deal and to make climate correct. So it is kind of...
Yeah, but the thing is that in the language is actually something that reads almost like an accusation of corruption about some of the leadership team from Pelosi because they're taking money from people in the fossil fuel industry. And I thought, well, that really shouldn't be in the city council order.
But it doesn't really say that. I don't know. I mean, I haven't read the Green Deal thing, so I don't know.
But anyway, they waved it through. So, you know, it's symbolic anyway, so we'll see how it goes. So that was basically the bulk of what happened.
And there is a meeting next week, yes?
I think the council does meet again this coming Monday.
Then I think
the following week is
Martin
Luther King's holiday.
And then is there a round table or is that they have a round table plus a meeting?
Soon enough, but I don't know exactly when.
Okay.
Yeah. So
there is an ordinance meeting Wednesday.
Ordinance committee on tree ordinance tomorrow at 5:30. So if you're interested, be there. See ya.